Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 24, Sherry Niedermeyer Connects with Her Teams. You are about to hear some amazing stories about leadership. With that, let's get started. There's two things you should know about Sherry. First, she's an achiever. She wants to outperform what's expected of her and her team. Second, if you're on her team and you're sincerely trying and learning, then Sherry will do anything she can to ensure that you're successful. And that means staying up late at night if she has to, being with the team, and doing whatever she can do to enable them to meet their goals. Sherry is the Chief Learning Design Officer at Human Capital Institute, or HCI, where she does amazing work to help human resource customers excel, learn, develop, and get the knowledge they need to be successful in their companies. Throughout her career, she's experienced some amazing leadership stories, and she's about to share some with us. Part 1, Friendships with Direct Reports. In my 9 Practices book, I talk about traditional leadership assumptions, and these are assumptions that can get you into a lot of trouble. There's things like leaders need authority, they're heroes who have to leave a legacy, that intimacy weakens leadership, and giving away power weakens leadership. But there's also something else. And this did not make the list of 13. It's pretty important, and I even believed it for a while when, back before I knew what leadership was really about. In her first story, Sherry discusses this. Here's Sherry.
I want to share a story from my time at a very conservative bank where I worked as an instructional design manager and senior manager for several years. Actually worked there for 8 years, which is probably the longest I've ever worked anywhere. Like many other people, I inherited a team that I did not choose or build myself. And I was given all of the low performers in this particular function. So I had 5 people who were nominally instructional designers, but had come from other places and had never had training and were very, very unengaged. I remember looking at the Gallup engagement scores and seeing that they were in the 2s and 3s instead of in the 4s or near 5 as they normally are. I knew I had a big job to manage them.
The Gallup is sort of like the employee engagement surveys.
Yes.
Okay, so you definitely have a challenge or had a challenge.
Right. And so, you know, at first I thought, well, I can turn this team around. I don't know if you know this, but I had spent 17 years being a teacher before I even got into corporate training.
Oh,
no. And out of those 17 years, most of them were spent working with high-risk students. So I was really used to looking at a group and figuring out what motivated them. How could I get better performance? How can I reward it? And I looked at this as that same sort of challenge. Well, it turns out that the team really didn't have the skills to do the job that they needed to do. And I actually had to let 4 out of the 5 people go. And when I mean let go, I mean manage them out of the organization. And it took several months to do that, and it was not pleasant for anybody. So I had to keep notes about what they did. I had to communicate very clearly what the expectations were, check their work on a daily basis, etc. I was hoping that a couple of people would rise to the occasion and show me that, but they actually cared. But out of the 5 people, 4 of them I let go. The 5th person became one of the stars of my next team that I built there, but I'll get to that in a minute. So the first time that I let somebody go, she actually hugged me on the way out. She knew that she wasn't up to the job. She had been suffering from migraines. She was just really unhappy in her life because of this, and I think it gave her freedom. The second person I let go wasn't quite as happy about it, and she actually swore at me for quite a long time.
Oh boy.
Until she got tired, and then HR escorted her out. The next person that I had to let go was in between. She wasn't happy about it, but she knew it was coming. In fact, when we finally got to the last conversation, which always ended with, we're going to let you go home now and think about what happened, and you can get back together with HR in a day or two, She had her stuff packed and she was near the door. That was okay. So after I let the people go, I was tasked with rebuilding the team. Yep. And I was able to hire a couple people and take a couple people from another team. So I ended up with 5 instructional designers. And in the first year that we worked together, the Gallup engagement scores went from being in the 2s and 3s to almost a perfect 5. So this was not only gratifying to me, but it was great for the team. And there were a few reasons that this happened. One is that I made sure to let people do what they were best at. So more of what you're good at and less of what you're not good at. I also had an open door and open phone policy. So if anyone wanted to talk to me, they could at any time. The other thing that happened was that they had been led before by people who weren't instructional design experts. I was, so I was able to help them with their work. As a matter of fact, I decided to be a working manager because I think that one of the key attributes of leadership is that you understand what your people are doing and you can function as that expert. As a matter of fact, I was just reading an article about Apple yesterday in Harvard Business Review. People who are the leaders at Apple are functional specialists first, and then they are managers second. Apple believes you can teach people management, but you can't teach them the expertise. So I think I believe that as well. So I felt really great with my team. As a matter of fact, we did 81 projects in our first year compared to the other instructional design team, which did 5 projects. So I was feeling pretty great when it came time to have the end of the year meeting with the chief learning officer. I thought, our statistics are great. Here's the data. The team is functioning like it never has before. I felt wonderful. Went into that meeting, happy as can be, and left it, I think, in shock. Because what the CLO told me was I was too close to my team and that I had to decide whether I wanted to be a manager or an instructional designer, but I couldn't do both well.
That's pretty surprising to be told that.
Yes, it was surprising. It was shocking. And really, it was disheartening. I knew she didn't like me. As a matter of fact, we had offices next to each other. And in the, I think, 3 years I worked for her, she never once came into my office.
Oh, boy. So she modeled what it means not to be close to people that work with her.
Absolutely. To the degree that she wouldn't say hello to people if she saw them. When I left, and I decided to give her some candid feedback, and I said to her, you need to walk around the floor and talk to people and say hello. Everyone is scared of you. And she said, well, I'm going to take that under consideration. But I learned from other people that she just doesn't do that. So we had somebody who I believe managed up. That is, her boss, the head of talent management and development, probably heard things like, we're under budget. This client is happy. I've reduced the staff by X amount. And all of those things that you might want to hear if you were only concerned about the revenue, but not concerned about anything else, and certainly not concerned about people. So I actually decided that I would never, ever work for anyone like that again, and I would never treat people that way. And I know it's a common thing to say, but you never forget how somebody makes you feel. If you have somebody coming into your office for the end of the year performance management review, and that person is totally shocked, you've done something wrong as a leader.
Yeah, definitely.
I like to think about having people being lifted up or being more engaged or even feeling better about themselves after talking with me or after having a review. I don't want people to be scared of me. And I think that this person did for some reason. I used to hear him teaching that for the first month you can't smile at the kids and it's better to be feared than respected. I don't believe that. And I don't think that anyone should manage by fear. It's not good for kids and it's not good for adults. And I'm quite positive it's not good for engagement and business results.
Yeah, to really engage with people, you have to connect with them and you have to give up control over the situation and allow for collaborations. And you have to believe in who they are and what they have to offer.
I agree. And I think that when you think about what you should do as a manager, if you say just connect, you'll go far. That means obviously spending more time listening than talking. But you have to see your people as individuals who bring their whole selves to work rather than as employees. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's a great way to be. And we've all found since COVID that more people are bringing their families into work, obviously, because they're working remotely, talking about themselves, sharing more of themselves. And I feel and believe, and I think the stats will bear this out, that people are more productive than ever when they're allowed to be themselves and encouraged.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm beginning to hear more and more of that as people start working more of in a virtual environment. And it seems to have opened up some opportunities for people in management to adapt to that type of approach.
I think so. And it was interesting to me that one of the people who used to be on the team who called me up recently, she'd been having some difficulties at a new job at a new organization and really just needed a pep talk. And somebody said to her, "You can do this. I've seen you do it. You can succeed here." And that's the kind of talk that I'm happy to give anytime to anybody who has worked for me. If you know what somebody can do and you can help them be the best that they can be, that's really a good leadership thing. And this is just plain English. It's not a leadership theory or anything like that. I think it just has to do with understanding people as humans.
Yeah, believing in them, knowing their capabilities, but in what you're saying is giving them the confidence that they may be lacking to be able to take on the situation. And I bet that when you do that, it helps them take on challenges and those stretch assignments and risks that they really should be taking.
Absolutely. If you have a relationship with somebody, it generally will last beyond the actual work relationship. I find that interesting because I have friends that I worked with 20, 25 years ago and also people that I've managed 15 years ago that I'm still in touch with. And to me, it's gratifying because as a teacher, first, I like to watch people grow, but also I consider a lot of people I work with my friends. So, you know, with this chief learning officer telling me I'm too close with my team, that is the exact opposite of what I think helps a team run. If you are friends with your team, that is, if you have a relationship that is based on mutual respect, you're not always working together. You might do some social things together, whatever. I don't see anything wrong with that. You don't want to be friends with somebody and then not be able to judge them, but that's a balancing act. And yes, I feel like if I am considered an advocate or as a friend for people that work with me now or have worked with me in the past, that's what I want.
Part two, to be a fear factor or to care? When managing a team, how do you lead? Do you lead with fear or do you lead with care? What are the pros and cons? What works, what doesn't work, in the short haul as well as in the long haul. Sherry has an interesting leadership story that really gets at this. Here's Sherry.
Right now I'm working for somebody who was a CEO, not somebody who came from human resources, and has a really interesting perspective about how we lead our team. But one of the things that he said to me during one of our lower points has always stuck with me. As I mentioned before, it's been really hard for us having to move from being in person to virtual and also having the same sort of financial problems that everyone else is having because of the COVID virus. So it's more important than ever to have people engaged, to have them feel that their work is appreciated and all of those good things. That's not to say that mistakes don't happen and bad performance doesn't happen. Now, I come from somewhere where if you did something wrong or whatever, you'd be called on the carpet. There might be something written. You would know about it and might follow you around. And the other thing that happened at this very conservative place is that everybody would know you were in trouble. Somebody from HR would come down. Person would have a look on her face. You knew who she was. She'd go into the CLO's office. Somebody might be called in there. Then all of a sudden, the gossip chain on the floor was activated, and everybody knew somebody was in trouble. Generally, yeah, There'd be a debrief with that person's friends. On occasions, there were tears. I hear that there were throwing of things, etc. What a hallmark of this was is that people did not know when this would happen. So they had no idea they were going to get in trouble unless they did something really egregious.
Even if the person made a mistake or and it was not intentional, whatever they did, it's amazing that they would come down so hard in an emotional negative way.
It is, but I think it is all from that mindset of, we tell you what your performance is, we have established values, et cetera, and I'm going to measure you on those in a very objective way. Also, I think the intent was to make sure that the person never ever made that same mistake again, but it was the wrong intent. And so, you know, at HCI, we also have people who do not do everything correctly 100% of the time. And coming from that different environment and getting to an environment which was much more nurturing and where people weren't, I guess, made to account for what they did wrong, it was different for me and it took me a little while. But I do remember our CEO, Chuck Feltz, saying something to me that I've remembered since then. And that is, if people do something wrong, they already feel bad enough. Don't make them feel worse. And yes, that has always stuck with me.
Yeah, that's very powerful because, you know, if they did something wrong, they realize it, they've learned from that experience. And why would you want to come down hard on that person even once they realize there's no point in coming down hard on that person because that employee has already done that for you. Not meaning that you would ever intend to come down hard on someone, you know?
Well, I had somebody on my team that was terrified of being fired. She was an outstanding instructional designer, great customer skills, but she had been let go from her last job because the entire learning function was outsourced. So no doing of hers led to her being let go, but she was terrified all the time. So for her to work in this sort of pressure cooker, where at any time the CLO might want to call her in, was very, very difficult for her. And I remember we were working on a project together, and she had done which now that I look back on it is really so minor. She used the words because in something instead of as a result of, and it was content that had belonged to another company, and we were supposed to use the words exactly. I don't know that they would have cared. Somebody reported her to the CLO, and there was a huge to-do over her using the different words, which was crazy. But the first thing that happened when she was actually called to talk about it, not with me, is that she started crying because she was terrified of being let go. And, you know, obviously she wasn't let go, but she was told to abide by the contract, even though she hadn't seen it, and that she had to check in with an extra person, and that the client was angry with her. I mean, this huge deal over a few words. I was told as her direct manager that I had to stop her from being worried that she was going to be let go every time she got in trouble, every time something happened.
That is super toxic. Amazing, yeah. Shockingly so.
You know, the more I've worked at places, and I've worked at a lot of places because I'm old, the more I'm shocked with some of the stories that people have. And I'm sure everybody has a story about the manager that made them feel bad, the time that they got in trouble at work and they didn't know what they did wrong. They probably have fewer stories about the person who saw what was good in them and nurtured that good. At least that's my belief. I went at this other place where I worked, I went a pretty long time without anybody ever saying anything nice to me. It just so happened that I knew what I was doing and I had confidence in myself from past successes. But if I had gone there when I was younger, I would have left quite quickly. And I might have left feeling that I didn't know what I was doing. I don't want anyone to feel that way.
It's one thing to not know the expectations and learning them. It's another thing to be held accountable as if you know the expectations, which is completely unfair and devastating how hard they come down on you, you know?
Yes. And as a leader, I think you want to be a person first and worry about the other stuff later. I think our CEO does a great job with it, considering we're all remote from each other, but I always keep that in mind. So when I talk with people and if there's a dog barking or a cat meowing or a baby crying, I welcome that.
Yeah. And it's part of being a human being who's working from home. And I think a lot of people in companies appreciate it when something like that happens.
I do as well. I think that we're not going to be going back to the wear a suit, be in the office every day from 9 to 5, never make a mistake, always be professional in everything that you do, to really seeing companies understanding that their employees are people first, employees second, and helping them to integrate those halves with each other.
Part 3, striving for authenticity. In talent development, one of the most powerful ways to learn is through modeling. And I don't mean modeling with clay or a runway model. What I'm talking about is someone that does the behavior and articulates the thinking behind the behavior so you can learn from that. There's a part of it that involves something called vicarious learning, where you learn from someone else's experience. Well, there's something about leadership where you are modeling what it means to lead. Sherry offers some advice that relates to this. Here's Sherry.
There's a few things. One is, I think you have to realize that if you are a leader, everybody's going to be looking to you for cues. Doesn't matter what's happening. So make sure that you are being authentic. And I know there's a lot of talk about being authentic, et cetera. So for example, if you have to downsize, don't give the message that, you know, this was happening because of certain things and you're good with it, et cetera. It's okay to be unhappy or to show emotion when something like that happens. It's a hard time for everybody. So I think that, you know, being an authentic person, showing emotions, is good versus bad. I also think that if you are managing people, you had better be in it as much as they are. Now, you know, here's an example from that other place where I worked. I was told you don't need to work longer than your employees. So if there's a project that they're working on and they have to go late in the night, don't help them with it. Let them do it. It's okay. I never believe that. If I know somebody has a deadline and they're having trouble making it, I pitch in and I help. And it doesn't matter if I am moving tables for training or ordering the food or even facilitating a course myself, I'm always going to help because that's my job.
Yeah. And people really appreciate that you're in it as much as them. And back to the authentic, it's being genuine to who you are and the values that you emulate.
Right. When I had to let people go, it was difficult. A few of them, I might have felt a little bit happy, but I definitely had to have a cocktail that evening. It's very hard when you know you're affecting people's lives and their livelihood. It's an awesome responsibility. And by awesome, I mean big, not wonderful. And you really have to take it seriously. Sometimes things have to be done, but you're not always going to feel good after it.
Yeah, exactly. You're human too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For people that you've had to let go, a lot of times it's for their best interest and they may appreciate it later, even if they were upset immediately afterwards.
I think some of them do. When you have to let people go because of budget considerations and they're high performers, that is, I think, to me, way harder.
Yes.
I've had to do that as well. I had to let somebody go recently who's a high performer who I considered a friend. I think that is probably one of the more difficult things that I've ever had to do at work. And I still think about it all the time. It's not like it happens, I'm going to wipe my hands and I'm all finished.
And I bet the person at the same time recognizes that and has appreciation for the situation you've been put in.
Well, I certainly hope so. I think it was calling a lot on her for, I didn't want to have her think about how it made me feel. I wanted her to be able to concentrate on herself and how that felt. So I don't know, but there's always a lesson in how you do things. I think when something bad happens, if you feel bad, you should.
My thanks to Sherry Niedermeyer. If you want to learn more about Sherry, go to the show notes. You'll find links there, and anything that we mentioned in the episode, you'll find some links there as well for that. If you'd like to leave a comment or ask a question, go to unlabelleadership.com, click the message icon, and you can leave a voicemail for up to 1 minute. Maybe I'll play it on the air. I'd like to thank those who support the show, and also, and more importantly, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, lead on.